It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Dr. Jason Lusk. First off, let's talk extended weather. Brad Rippey, meteorologist with USDA.
It does look like a lot of the country is going to continue to experience summer-like weather, above normal temperatures, widespread across the central and eastern United States. There may be a bit of a push of cool air, however, across the northern and central Rockies, the Intermountain West, and the Great Basin. In terms of precipitation patterns, some of this is speculative because of the uncertainty of what might happen with the tropical cyclone developing over the Gulf of Mexico. But even with that uncertainty, there is an expectation that an area stretching from the Gulf Coast northward through the Mississippi Valley and into the Midwest will be expecting above normal precipitation. At the same time, drier than normal conditions expected across the Northeast and in a large area stretching from California to the southern half of the High Plains.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Dr. Jason Lusk. Jason is the distinguished professor and head of the Department of Ag Economics at Purdue University. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tony.
Okay. Some will just know who you are because of what you do today, and others might know you from your time maybe growing up in West Texas. So let's talk a little more about Jason and your path from maybe West Texas to Purdue.
Sure. Yep. I'm a West Texas native, born in Plainview, grew up in Lotney up until almost junior high. Then we moved south to Wellman, Texas, which is down by Brownfield, before my parents moved back to Lotney. Spent the summer of my freshman year of college working for the Floyd County Extension agent. So got to drive all over the county that summer, and got a degree in food science from Texas Tech, and then a PhD in economics from Kansas State, and then worked for several universities, but ultimately found my way here to Purdue in Indiana. But still have family in the Texas Panhandle, and love that part of the country. Would love to live there, except my wife, one day when she flew in, when we first started dating, she flew in the middle of one of those dust storms, and she said, "We could get married, but we can never live here." And that was a precondition of us being married. So as a result, we come and visit, but I've chosen to live elsewhere.
Yeah, those prenuptial agreements are pretty set in stone there. Let's talk more about now Purdue University. And, you know, when we talk about Purdue, there is so much that's tied back into agriculture. How do you describe the work that's going on right now at Purdue?
Yeah, I mean, it's the reason I'm here is if you want to be in the middle of sort of top-notch research in agriculture, this is the place to be in terms of agricultural economics, which is, you know, my area and field. We have one of the largest departments in the country here, about almost between 40 and 50 faculty, and another 40 or 50 staff, really excellent centers. We have a center for food and agribusiness, a center for commercial agriculture, a center for global trade analysis, and others. So this is really in the heart of, you know, a lot of the innovation that's going on. The big efforts and initiatives we have on campus more broadly are centered around digital agriculture and, you know, trying to make sense of all the data that's now coming in on farms and creating more sensors and tools and techniques to get even more data off of farms. We've got a big effort in plant phenotyping, using all these sensors to try to understand how plants grow. And again, the big challenge and the word of the day is data analytics and what can we do to better understand agriculture. So it's a, you know, it's not West Texas, but it's a fantastic place to be if you're really interested in what's happening in food and agriculture.
And when we talk about it not being one part of the country, it's interesting how the research that goes in that you're involved in there really can apply for producers even across the country. And one thing I've been really impressed with here as of late is something called the Vulnerability Index. Tell us more about that.
Sure. You know, in the early stages of this COVID pandemic, you know, think mid to late March, I was getting inundated with calls from media and others asking you know, really various forms of one basic question. Are we going to run out of food? Because for the first time, really, in probably my lifetime at least, people went to the grocery store shelves and didn't find what they wanted. The shelves weren't fully stocked, and this was shocking to people, and it does show how much we've taken for granted in our food supply chain. And, you know, but that being said, my overall sense was we got enough food out there. The food supply is not really at risk because, you know, agriculture is seasonal. And particularly for our main commodity crops, you know, we have in storage whatever we anticipated needing, you know, at the moment. And even for more fresh fruits, vegetables, you know, we made decisions months ago that are leading to the outputs we're seeing today. So, you know, one of my thoughts is how can I articulate to people that our food supply is secure? And also, you know, if there are vulnerabilities that come up, how can we, you know, find those and stay on top of them? So essentially what we did is created a web-based tool that overlays a couple of pieces of data and some maps. One is the COVID maps that everybody's probably seen on the news, just where are people in the country that have, you know, been diagnosed with COVID-19. Overlay that with data on where we know there are farmers and hired agricultural workers. And those two pieces of data allow us to make an estimate of the potential number of agricultural workers that could be sick. And then we could overlay that with data on what's produced in those counties. You know, what are the agricultural commodities and where are those grown? And, you know, using all those data, you can essentially make an estimate of, you know, how much of the production of a certain commodity potentially is at risk because of COVID. And as I mentioned, for most commodities, it's a very low number. And the reasons are, number one, that rural areas haven't generally been hit as hard by COVID as some of our more urban areas. And then secondly, a lot of our agricultural commodities production is fairly widely geographically distributed. So if you have a, you know, big problem in, you know, one county, as long as the next county over isn't facing the exact same problem, you know, the national supply isn't too affected. You know, as it turns out, you know, it's not the food supply that's potentially at risk. It's, you know, the real bottlenecks and problems have been is mainly in food processing, particularly meat processing. So one of the things we're thinking about now is whether we can expand this approach to move sort of one step forward in the food supply chain and measure those potential vulnerabilities at the processing rather than the farm level.
You know, as you bring this up, it really makes me think of something else that people might have recognized and associate your name with, and that is the fact that we can put your name in Google and bring up something known as a TED Talk. And, you know, the fact is you really have the opportunity to talk from time to time about food and food as the consumer sees it. Can you talk a little more about that and maybe some of the avenues that your background has afforded you to take on those discussions?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I'd like to somehow claim this was all planned out, but, you know, the accidents in life sometimes work out in your favor. And I think that's happened in my case, that, you know, my family wasn't directly involved in farming, at least my parents. They were educators. Dad was a superintendent principal. But, you know, I grew up in these rural and agricultural areas. And for most of junior high and high school, you know, worked on neighbors' cotton farms. We grew, you know, raised some animals for 4-H and FFA and that kind of stuff. So I had a connection to agriculture, had a sense of, you know, what it was like. And because of some good ag teachers, went to, you know, they encouraged me to pursue food science. And so that kind of turned me on to the more, you know, consumer end of that supply chain, and which is really honestly where most of my work has been in terms of my academic career. But the fact that I had this background to be able to connect it at least to, you know, some semblance of what the reality was like on a farm has been extraordinarily useful and helpful in trying to talk to consumers and understand consumers and how they think about the food supply chain. So, you know, that's been really helpful on a variety of issues from, you know, things like GMOs, for example, where, you know, widespread adoption on the farm level, but a lot of skepticism on the consumer level, and trying to understand that and talk to people about it has been a real challenge. And I think for me, my background has been very helpful in that regard. I think I mentioned just a few minutes ago that I worked for a county extension agent. This would have probably been in the, you know, 90s sometime. And I remember there was a demonstration plot of some sort of herbicide resistant cotton. I remember the county agent at the time told me to go out there and spray this herbicide on the cotton. I thought he was nuts. But I did it because he told me to. And I remember we came back out and all the weeds were dead, but the cotton was alive. And for me, this was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen, because I really hated the other jobs I'd had, which were mainly just walking miles, hoeing cotton weeds. And so my, you know, I had this personal experience with my reaction being amazed at this technology, and then to see how the typical sort of food consumer responds to that, it doesn't have that same kind of connection. You know, it's been, I think, interesting, useful. It's been a source of a lot of research over the years, but also maybe a sense of trying to understand how people come to different conclusions about some of these. And so, you know, I think overall, one of the things I've tried to do is bring a sense of why farmers make the decisions they do to the consumer, help people try to understand the merits and benefits of agricultural productivity and science, and try to, you know, not a lot of people seem to have a lot of sort of fanciful thinking about how we solve some of the big problems in food and agriculture. And I think trying to bring a sense of reality to some of those conversations, you know, are things I've done in books and TED Talks and all the rest.
Finally, as we conclude here, you talk about that research, and it's interesting because we can just type in jasonlusk.com and we get a direct line to some of the work that you're doing. You post a blog, I think, once a week. What can somebody who's interested in what you're talking about, what will they find on that website?
Yeah, well, that's probably the best way to find at least my current thinking on something is to go to that blog. And there is a Y in my name, so it's jasonlusk.com. And, you know, what you'll see is over the past month and a half, it's sort of been coronavirus all day, every day, and impacts on food and meat sector kind of work. But, you know, it's, you know what, as I said, it's even in times where I wasn't focused on this, a lot of my work has tended to focus on the more of the consumer end of the supply chain, issues around food and ag technologies, food policies, not necessarily farm policy, but consumer related policies, and then how they impact the food sector. Those, you know, whatever's in the news are things I tend to write a little bit about. So folks can go there and send me a note, my email address on there. I'd love to hear from folks.
Again, find out more online at jasonlusk.com. That's jasonlusk.com. Dr. Jason Lusk, Distinguished Professor, Head of the Department of Ag Economics at Purdue University, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Grit and resilience are in a cotton grower's genes. They're in the genes of a Fibromax cotton variety, too. Fibromax 2334 GLT is tailor-made for your dry land acres with medium maturity, resistance to bacterial blight, and an outstanding fiber package. And the bottom line? Fibromax can help growers earn up to $159 more per acre than the competition. That's smart. Talk with your local BASF seed advisor or retailer about Fibromax 2334 GLT. Results may vary.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Dr. Jason Lusk with Purdue University.
Purple Wave Auction will sell over 500 pieces of equipment this week at no reserve auction. Each item will sell regardless of price. Bid now on tractors, mini excavators, lifts, passenger vehicles, boats, RVs, trucks, wheel loaders, skid steers, cranes, backhoes, and much more. Bidding is easy. Simply visit purplewave.com to get started. Purple Wave Auction. Straight, simple, sold.
At the American Veterinary Medical Association annual convention in Denver, we caught up with Dr. Kerry Ryan, pet cloning and genetic preservation expert with Viagen in Cedar Park, Texas.
We've been working with dogs and cats for 3 years. We're the only company in the United States that clones dogs and the only company in the world that clones cats. And we've also been cloning horses and livestock for about 15 years. So I think this will be here to stay. And I think as we get better and better at it, the costs will come down and people will be more and more interested in it.
There's more information at avma.org.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Keep up with Dr. Jason Lusk online, jasonlusk.com, jasonlusk.com.
Grit and resilience are in a cotton grower's genes. They're in the genes of a new Fibromax cotton variety, too. Fibromax 2398 GLTP offers bacterial blight resistance, very good tolerance to verticillium wilt, and Twin Link Plus for 3-gene protection from bollworms. And the bottom line? Fibromax can help growers earn up to $159 more per acre than the competition. That's smart. Talk with your local BASF seed advisor or retailer about Fibromax 2398 GLTP. Results may vary.
Have you thought about how COVID-19 might affect your farm? You need a contingency plan in writing. Then share it with everyone who needs to know what to do and when to do it in order to keep your farm working, if you can't. The point is you need to be ready for anything, and that means taking care of yourself and planning carefully for your farm, starting today. So please, plant safe and plant smart. Visit ncga.com/COVID-19.
A message from Texas corn producers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue spoke at a virtual commencement ceremony to graduates of USDA's 1890s National Scholars Program.
Thank you all for allowing me to join you today. I really appreciate the opportunity to celebrate your great accomplishments with you, and graduating from college, as you know, is a big deal.
He noted that these are challenging times as he quoted former President John F. Kennedy.
He said, "We're not here to curse the darkness, but to light a candle that can guide us through the darkness to a safe and a sane place and a safe future." And I think your education has given you the ability, has lit that candle for you, but it's your choice to brighten that world and take that candle where light is needed.
He also had a reminder for graduates.
These challenging circumstances do not take away from what you've accomplished. You will always have your education.
The program provides full college tuition to students pursuing degrees in agriculture or related disciplines. This is Stephanie Hope in Washington, D.C.